Welcome into the Dr. Edwards program. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards, MD with Veritas Medical. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Wade. I'm doing very well this morning.
Good to have you back on the program and our also our favorite health coach.
Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for that.
It is. And I have to say hi to my sister, Tamara. She listens on the way in to go into tech.
Well, that's...
So, if you're listening... Hello, sister.
It's all good, all good.
But I didn't mean to take away from your birthday.
No, that's okay. One more year. You know what, though? It's always good. I don't really like birthdays that much.
That bugs me.
You can look at it from the positive point of view, saying, hey, that's one more year that I'm around as opposed to not being around, right?
Right, and I would say now that you're eating more real food that your health coach wife has been pushing on you, you don't look a day over 30, I don't think.
Yeah.
Isn't that awesome? Isn't that great? Well, I know we have a special guest on the phone with us today, and of course we're going to get right to him in just a minute here. But again, let me tell you about, Veritas Medical. Right here in Lubbock, again, you can always reach out to us at 1-855-6-VERITAS. Also, check out our website at veritasmedical.com, all one word. But Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. And again, along the way, if you have any questions, would like to join in on the conversation, you certainly can do that throughout the program at 745-5800, 745-5800. Or you can text in your comments and questions as well at 806-745-5800. Now, that being said, we have a special guest on the program, Joel
Salatin.
Salatin.
Polyface Farms out in Virginia.
I'm going to get him cranked up on the back line so people can still call in if they have a question. But go ahead and do the introductions, Dr. Edwards.
Okay. Well, as our listeners know, since I shifted my practice to functional medicine, we preach, let thy food be thy medicine. That was from Hippocrates over 2,000 years ago. I always tell my patients that your body, your cells are constantly dying. The lining of your gut, every 4 days, those cells die. The rods and cones in the back of the eye, those cells die every 48 hours. Your red blood cells die every 90 days. Your liver cells die every 8 weeks. All your cells die, and you regenerate new ones. You're always regenerating a whole new you. But when you've got to make a new eyeball cell, a new hamstring cell, a new brain cell, or whatever cell it is that you're regenerating, your blueprint, your recipe of how to do that is your DNA. But the raw materials, your ingredients, the pantry that's full of the baking soda and the flour and the eggs and all that, your raw materials to build these cells, that's your vitamins, minerals, fats, proteins. You get that from your food. And if your pantry's empty, your liver doesn't have the raw materials in it because you didn't digest the food, because you didn't eat real food, because 60 to 90% of the food Americans eat today isn't actually food, then you're going to make inadequate cells. You're going to make cells that are dysfunctional and they can't perform the jobs they're supposed to perform. It's going to lead to this chronic inflammatory state that we're all in and all the Western diseases that are on the rise. So because food is medicine and that's what we preach at our clinic, the only way our patients are able to reverse their chronic inflammatory disease is not from some magic potion I give them. It's because we coach them and teach them on how to bring the right nutrition into the body, hydration, movement, and peace. But nutrition's huge, huge, huge. And what Joel Salatin has done with farming is, I liken it a little bit to what functional medicine's doing in the medical field. We're turning the industry up on its head. I went from 40 patients a day in the old school way of doing medicine to 5 patients a day. But the people actually get well. So it's a whole different way to do medicine, where this is what Joel does with farming, a whole new way and different way to do farming. So Joel Salatin is owner and purveyor of Polyface Farms, of 4 generations, I believe, on that farm. He's an author, he's a presenter, a widely sought after, brilliant mind in sustainable agriculture. So, Joel, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's great to be with you. Yes.
Well, I really want to give you a little bit of free rein here. We've got about an hour, a little under now, and I want to you basically just to share your message. But I was listening to some of your stuff over the past week or two, and I wanted to start with this quote that you, I think it was Google you were talking to. You said, we are the first culture in all of civilization to eat food we can't pronounce, and the first culture in all of civilization to eat food we can't make in our own kitchen, i.e. high fructose corn syrup, and we're the first culture in civilization that eats food that's from 1,500 miles away instead of the farm next door. So can you speak to that a little bit and just tell the audience a little bit more about the farm and what you do?
Sure. Well, we farm in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley, which is here on the western edge of Virginia, not to be confused with West Virginia. You know, we tell West Virginia jokes around here. It's a grass-based farm. You know, this valley was a tall grass prairie 500 years ago with bison and passenger pigeons and prairie chickens and, you know, a very diversified animal and plant population. And then the Europeans came, plowed it all up, planted monocrops, annuals. And we are in the process, and eroded the soil, and we are in the process of rebuilding that soil, returning it to a perennial base with the multi-speciated, balance that used to be here. We don't have bison, we don't have fire, and we don't have passenger pigeons. What we do have is electric fence, domestic livestock, and poultry. And so the whole idea is to mimic the type of migratory and migratory choreography and dietary parameters that these things had, and to rebuild the soil that has been eroded during that time. So we move the cows every day, we move the chickens behind the cows, the birds following the herbivore, like in nature, and everything gets salad bar, green material. All the omnivores, you know, they eat a fair amount of green material, and so by moving them all the time out on pasture, they get a lot of salad bar. So what this does is completely change the fatty acid, the conjugated linoleic acid, the riboflavin, the folic acid, you know, all those essential things, including the balance between polyunsaturated, unsaturated, and saturated fat, and moves it more to what our bodies want to have, and of course it makes them all far more dense. The taste is richer, the taste is stronger, and you don't have all the pathogenicity that's created by breathing in and living in fecal particulate all the time, or living in a habitat that's nutrient deficient. Instead, it's nutrient dense, and that's a much better situation. So, here we are in a place in our civilization that no civilization's ever been in before. You know, we've never been able to have factory farms in history because you simply couldn't, with draft power, you know, mules and horses and oxen, you can never cram that many animals in one place at one time, and you couldn't transport things as efficiently as we can with, you know, machines and cheap petroleum. And so the things that tied us to not being able to abuse things quite so fast. And I want to be quick to say, civilization has been abusing nature for a long time. It didn't start with Monsanto. But what has changed is our ability to abuse it more aggressively and more rapidly. That has never happened. So, and we've been able to go farther. So now we can, put, high fructose corn syrup and MSG and red dye 29, in our food. You couldn't do that 100 years ago. I'm kind of a big believer that with Michael Pollan that we probably shouldn't eat things that weren't available in 1900, and we can all be thankful that hot dogs were introduced at the 1890 World's Fair. Just got in there right under the wire. But of course, there again, you can have good hot dogs, you can have bad hot dogs. And on our farm, we make really, really great hot dogs out of beef and pork with nothing else, and they're really super. So, all of our labels are short. they're pronounceable, and everything is produced right here where it's local, and there's a very short chain of, you know, of custody between farm and fork, and that creates a greater level of accountability, transparency, and knowledge on the part of the patron, and that's important.
Yes, it is. I tell people all the time that nutrient-dense food is what you need to eat, and that I wish there was some way to make nutrient-dense food so sought after by the consumer that the producers, that would be their goal, instead of just tonnage. You know, how much of this one crop can we produce, pounds and tons? But if we could somehow measure things from a micronutrient level, and let's pay for micronutrient-dense food, because that's what's really going to keep you healthy and help reverse these chronic diseases we deal with in my clinic. So can you speak to the economics a little bit? We have a lot of farmers on this radio station. It's kind of known as the ag station in this area, and we've got a lot of grain, some wheat and sorghum, but mostly it's cotton. And they're big farms. The kind of family farms have dwindled and gone away. We do have a lot of ranchers too, cows, some goat, but mainly cows in this neck of the woods. But the comment I always hear is, well, I just can't do that. It's not sustainable. I can't make a living, et cetera, et cetera. Can you speak to that a bit about how you make a living on, or how you teach people to make a living on 100 acres or 200 or 300 acre farms instead of 20,000 acre farms where you have all the mechanized equipment and million-dollar loans at the bank and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, well, the whole idea here is to very much diversify what you're producing. We've developed an incredibly specialized agricultural base because we have come now for the last, pretty much since Justus von Liebig in 1837, the Austrian chemist who used his vacuum tubes to isolate the nutrients in organic materials in vegetation. All he could find was nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus, and so he developed the NPK philosophy that all living material is just a reorganization of NP and K, which is incredibly simplistic, but it became the world's, you know, kind of the world's paradigm, and so and that's generally considered to be the beginning of a mechanical view toward food. As soon as you go to a mechanical view toward food, you take a kind of obviously an inanimate, mechanistic type of approach, which moves you to a parts-oriented, cookie-cutter, single type of thing. I mean, you don't have a factory that makes automobiles and filing cabinets. you pick one or the other,
right.
And in machinery, we're all about specialization, simplification, routinization, and biology is completely opposite that. It's all about complexity and relationship and spontaneity and dynamics and all this. And so the first thing farmers have to understand is that we need to mesh into this biological, ecological matrix with complexity. So that means we're going to have many, many species of things. We're going to grow lots of different plants, different animals, and we're going to look at nature as a template, and guess what? What we see there is carbon, is in situ carbon recycling. You know, nature builds soil with perennials and animals and in on-site carbon recycling. And what we've got now is we've got a tremendous amount of annuals without incorporating a multi-year perennial, you know, rotation. We've got animal-less, you know, we can get rid of the animals and just put on, you know, chemical petroleum-based fertility. and a lack of appreciation for the role of carbon in that whole, you know, the whole biomass, the whole soil web matrix. So, so a farmer can make a living, but you've got to think about first looking at nature's template and saying, how do we duplicate this? For ranchers, you know, the beautiful thing is you can, if you do what we call mob stocking, herbivorous solar conversion, lignified carbon sequestration, fertilization.
Can you say that again?
Sure. It's mob stocking, herbivorous solar conversion, lignified carbon sequestration, fertilization.
All right, let's break that down.
Let's break that down. So instead of having the animals just spread across the landscape, if you look at nature, they don't spread across. They clump up. They clump up in bunches for predator protection, that sort of thing. And so we don't have the predators today as much. We don't have the fire. We don't have the large migratory herds of, you know, 7 million bison and things. We do have domestic stock and electric fencing. And so we use electric fencing to be able to confine the cows or the poultry in small spots, and then we move them every day to another spot. That's this mob stocking idea. And the whole thing is to collect solar energy through herbaceous material, pruning it with herbivores. So that's your herbivorous solar conversion, where the herbivores, the role of the herbivore in nature is to prune back the biomass at a strategic time as it moves into senescence to restart the very, very rapid teenage growth spurt. So if forage, if biomass is pruned too early, it's weakened, it becomes weak. If it's pruned too late, it sits there just vaporizing off, you know, carbon dioxide and exhaling all the goodies. And so the reason that there are herbivores all over the planet, from llamas and alpacas and guinea pigs to, you know, zebras and wildebeests and caribou and moose and bison and everything else, the reason there are so many herbivores around the world is because forages, grasses primarily, are far more efficient at collecting solar energy and turning it into biomass than either shrubs or trees. But they go through a very rapid, this efficiency, the downside is a very rapid metabolic cycle. So a tree has a very slow, long metabolic cycle. A bush is a little bit shorter, a bush or a shrub, and grass is real, real fast. The downside of that rapidity is that it needs maintenance. It needs more maintenance than a tree. It needs more maintenance than a bush. The maintenance comes in the form of the pruning herbivore. And so rather than having the animals just willy-nilly out continuous grazing on an area, we use high-tech electric fencing that's very, very cheap, very portable, to mimic this clumping, this mobbing, herding effect, so that the animals are only on one little spot, then it's allowed to go through its teenage growth period, and we don't allow the animals back onto that spot until the grasses have recuperated, you know, up toward senescence. And what that does, A, it generates a lot of root mass, root material, sugars in the soil, carbon, and organic matter release. But it also actually produces more. So, for example, in our county in Virginia, the average cow days per acre, a cow day is what one cow will eat in a day. The average in here in our county is 80 cow days per acre per year. So an acre will feed 80 cows for one day a year, one cow for 80 days a year. That's the average. On our farm, we haven't bought a bag of chemical fertilizer and we haven't planted a seed in 60 years, and our average is 400 cow days per acre. That's five times the county average. So this management intensity yields far more than, you know, GMOs or hybridization or tillage or John Deere or any of these other things we can imagine. It yields way, way more than that.
That's incredible. So basically you're saying on a small plot of land you can outproduce times five what a conventional neighbor in your county is doing.
Yes. That's correct.
This technique go ahead.
Yeah, and you know what's beautiful is that we're not this outproducing is not a negative thing. In other words, we're not raping the land in order to get there. It's actually synergistic. It's actually a manifestation of these symbiotic principles working to actually increase the soil organic matter, water retentive capacity, because, you know, organic matter, 1 pound of organic matter holds 4 pounds of water. So if you can increase your organic matter a little bit, that's better than irrigation. And so all these things begin kicking in, and so it's a matter of where everything wins. In order to make production win, you're not decreasing fertility, soil, or nutrition. All the boats are floating at the same time, which is, you know, very cool.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And you do it by mimicking nature, mimicking how God's original design was, and that's exactly what we do in our clinic with the human body. We try to put things back in order the way God originally intended it, and the natural consequence of that is these symptoms and disease go away. We don't actually chase a certain symptom or disease. We just try to bring order wherever there's disorder, and we try to look back at the original intent of the one who designed it all and just get things back to that. And it's exactly what you're doing here on the farm in the agricultural world. So that's awesome.
Yeah, well, the whole idea of order out of chaos is a very, you know, profound spiritual concept. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly, if you look at a way to destroy the ecology, or let's just zero in, if you wanted to have a farming system that was extremely pathogenic, toxic, and disease-oriented, well, what would we do? Well, we would make a farm that produces only one thing. So the pathogens don't have to be confused, you know, from one species to another. You know, that they're always close to a host, so they can proliferate. And then we would put that one single thing that we were producing, we'd put it real, real close together. We wouldn't spread it out. We wouldn't rest the land or the building. You know, we'd keep it full of chickens or cows or tomato plants or whatever, you know, all the time. So there's always a host, and they're always really, really close together. And then ideally we'd block out the sun. So we'd get these animals, in this case, you know, off of pasture, and we'd put them in confinement houses. And there they could even not only would get the sunshine and the fresh air and the exercise off of them, all those things are healthy. So we don't want any of those things. But we then they stir up all this dust and fecal particulate, which they can then breathe, and it makes lesions in their tender mucous membranes, so they get these sores, these blood sores, you know, where this fecal particulate then can go right into their digestive, respiratory, oviduct systems in the case of a laying hen. And, and then to combat that, we're going to give them antibiotics. The antibiotics, of course, routinely, those are going to have surviving bugs that become super bugs. And so now we've got even more virulent pathogens than we had before we started. And, you know, and you head down this path, and as you describe it, it almost sounds like some sort of a Frankenstein thing, you know. But what I've just described is exactly the trajectory of our industrial farming complex.
Yeah.
And so there's no wonder that we have a new lexicon of Salmonella, E. coli, Campylobacter, you know, words that when I was growing up, nobody ever heard those words. We never saw, heard, or spoke those words. And yet today, they trip off the tongue off of anybody because they're normal, including, you know, food allergy and type 2 diabetes and all this stuff. I mean, the phrase food allergy didn't even occur until like 20, 25 years ago. You could have a church potluck and nobody had to ask, you know, who's gluten intolerant, who's, you know, this, that, or the other. You know, you didn't have to worry about all these kinds of things. And now, every shindig, every get-together you have, you know, you got to have this long questionnaire about, you know, what can people eat? Is there anybody that's going to go into a seizure if they smell peanuts? I mean, it's unbelievable. And what's happened is we as a civilization have assaulted our nest. We've assaulted the very foundations of life. And when you assault the foundations of life, it's going to life is going to respond, and it's going to respond. You know, we can either say it's fighting back, or I like to say, you know, Campylobacter, E. coli, and all these, you know, squiggly Latin words that we've learned to say. They're essentially a lexicon that has our nest on the ropes, begging, saying enough abuse, enough disrespect, enough dishonor. And begging for relief. And the question is, will we offer relief, or will we just simply do what we're doing, invent more, you know, genetic modified organisms, cloning, and more toxic concoctions from the devil's pantry, and as they're doing right now, try to isolate the porcine stress gene so we can simply abuse the pigs worse, but at least they won't be stressed about it.
Yeah. Well, you said Frankenstein, and that's exactly what it is. I mean, when you start messing with God's design, disastrous outcomes are inevitable. I think we need to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about this quote from one of your presentations. You said, you can't have an economically viable civilization without an ecologically viable soil. So we'll take a quick break and come back with that. Just one second.
Listen to your body. It may be telling you it's missing something. When we're missing omega-3s, we can feel run down, stiff, achy, or have a hard time focusing and handling stress. Omega-3s are vastly deficient in the American food supply, and we can't achieve optimal health without them. Nordic Naturals fish oils provide a convenient way to get the omega-3s you need and deliver industry-leading purity, freshness, and taste. Visit Natural Health Market at 4414 82nd Street in the Village Shopping Center.
Are you experiencing low back pain, neck pain, headaches, or pain as a result of an injury? Then let me introduce you to my chiropractor, Dr. Carla Haddock. Dr. Haddock has been practicing chiropractic care for many years, specializing in diversified treatment, drop table, cold laser therapy, and acupuncture. No expensive treatment plans, and your initial exam is free. If you're looking to improve your health and experience a pain-free lifestyle, then call Dr. Haddock at 239-7190. That's 239-7190. Call for your free initial exam today. Haddock Chiropractic is a proud sponsor of the morning health show, You're the Cure, with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, every Monday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on AM 580 Radio. Haddock Chiropractic, 239-7190.
Vitamins Plus is a full-line health food store located inside Drug Emporium on the corner of 82nd Slide Road. Right now, we have a very large selection of natural cold, flu, and allergy remedies. It's that time of year to build up your immunity to help you fight off this year's bugs. If we don't have it in stock, what you're looking for, then we can special order it. Texas owned and operated for over 20 years. Good for you groceries at great for you prices. That's Vitamins Plus inside Drug Emporium, 82nd and Slide Road. Get by and see us today.
We're visiting with Dr. Flippin with Exodus New Beginnings. You can always check out the website ExodusNB.com. Go there, check it out. Dr. Flippin, tell us about chelation therapy and why IV chelation therapy is better than oral chelation therapy.
Well, first of all, I'd like to tell you, Wade, about chelation, what it is. And basically, it is an agent that pulls heavy metals out of your body. Heavy metals get stored in your bones and your organs. And so that's what chelation is. Basically, the IV chelation is a lot more effective because you get a higher dose. So the oral chelating agents only have a tenth of the dose of an IV chelation. So you would have to do 10 times more oral chelations, plus the fact that they're only 23% absorbed. So do the math. At 23%, it's 40 times longer.
Oh, yeah. And we all know that we're exposed to environmental toxins and a lot of heavy metals and fillings in our teeth. I mean, we've got it all over the place. And this really helps to combat diseases related to those heavy metals, right?
Exactly. And one of the diseases is coronary artery disease.
Wow, yeah.
The heavy metals actually cause inflammation, which starts the cascade of coronary artery disease.
Be sure to visit the new location at 7711 Woodrow Road. That's 7711 Woodrow Road. Or call 863-3903. That's 863-3903. You can always visit the website, ExodusNB.com.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, and, of course, special guest with us on the show. Let's get right back into it.
Yeah, we were just going to go with this quote of, you can't have an economically viable civilization without an ecologically viable soil. And I love that. The soil is so key to plant health. Obviously, all the microbes in the soil, you need good topsoil, you need good nutrients being released by those microbes in the soil. And when we eat these plants that are full of all these nutrients, the human body gets the benefit of all these things too. So I know, Joel, you talked about it in one of your books or one of the presentations about the soil on your farm. When your parents, when your dad showed up there 50 or 60 years ago, that the topsoil was minuscule. There were hard patches here and there, bare earth, gullies, and whatnot. Can you talk about a little bit about the restoration of land, or if farmers out here have land that's been tilled and uncovered, you know, for generations, and you know, have lost a lot of the
sure.
organic matter and stuff like that? How did you restore it, and how do you teach people to restore it?
Yeah, well, the quickest way on a macro level when you're dealing with a lot of acreage is with perennials. That's the way nature builds soil. Nature never tills, and if you think about the way fertility is built in nature, it's always it's perennials that either fall over or are harvested by animals, with those nutrients being placed on top of the soil, not tilled into the soil, not knifed in.
Right.
But actually placed on top. As we say, earthworms like to be fed on top of their heads. And so that's the principle. And the reason that works is because when the plant is grazed off or mowed off, it actually sloughs off an equivalent amount of material. You know, there's bilateral symmetry at the soil horizon between what's above the soil and what's below the soil. And so when above the soil is chopped off, the plant automatically prunes off. It literally jettisons an equivalent amount of biomass underground, so that the plant doesn't go into shock trying to maintain all these miles of little, you know, root hairs. And the roots more closely approximate the crown. So now you've got all this energy to be able to go into the core of the plant. That's the way nature works. And of course, the more you can stimulate that plant to grow vigorously and to accumulate biomass, the faster you're going to inject organic matter into the soil, which organic matter is the key to everything. It's the key to water retention, softness, porosity, and of course, it's the fuel for all of this microorganic activity that's in the soil. There's more beings in a handful of healthy soil than there are people on the face of the earth. It's teeming with, you know, nematodes and mycorrhizae and gibberellins and actinomycetes and all these things. So the key is building up that organic matter, carbonaceous matter in the soil. The fastest for that is the herbivore on a perennial. That's why all the great soils of the planet were built not under forests and not under, you know, tillage. They were built under herds of herbivores on prairie-type conditions. Now, there are helpers. For example, in Texas, in southwest the United States, as well as the whole of North America, 500 years ago, we were up to 8% in beaver ponds. The 8% of the landscape was water, primarily due to beaver ponds. That's included in the very arid areas of southwest, Colorado and Arizona, Nevada, West Texas. So, again, we don't have the beavers. There were up to 200 million beavers at that time. And a beaver eats more salad than an individual. Beavers are herbivores, half, and a beaver eats more than a human of salad. And so think about it, that at that time, half, the equivalent of half the U.S. population was just in beavers. I mean, you know, that those are amazing things. It should give us all pause to realize that 500 years ago, what is today the United States grew more nutrition than it does today with hybrid seeds, John Deere, irrigation, and all the things that we do. So, we don't have the beavers today, but we do have excavation equipment. We have, understandings from permaculture, and so we can create water areas. We can hydrate the landscape with riparian zones, with excavated ponds, actually higher on the landscape, to again further hydrate, to stimulate the production of biomass from cattails to grass to seepage to spring flow. And so moving the herbivore across the landscape, moving them every day to a new spot, I call it caressing or massaging the landscape with the kind of massage, both the animal movement and the water from the beaver ponds, those kinds of things. What we do then is completely recreate the habitat, the engine, if you will, moves the ecology to a better place. The fact is that if all the money that had gone into Los Alamos had gone in instead to building ponds in the highlands, today New Mexico would be an oasis. We would be flood-proof, drought-proof, and those big dusty arroyos that are the pathways for sand rails and dirt bikes most of the year, but run up to their gills muddy about 5 days a year, those would not exist, and we would indeed have essentially recreate Eden. And we can't completely recreate Eden, but I think that our mandate as humans is to bring our intellectual capacity and our mechanical ability into our landscape like nothing else can do, and extend redemptive capacity into this nest. That is quite a mandate, and it's very exciting.
Yes, it is. I want to talk a little bit on a real practical level. I heard one of your presentations. You talked about leasing 20 acres from a local, from a neighbor. It was kind of trashy land that normally wouldn't, nobody would want. So 20 acres, you divide it into these 40 different half-acre pens, and you put a bunch of pigs on there and basically netted $60,000, I believe it was. Speak to that a little bit. A lot of these farmers are going to want to hear some real world stuff like that.
Sure. Well, yeah, this was a 20 acre place that we leased, and it was reverting back to woods. It was, you know, getting all brushy. You couldn't walk through it for the blackberries, brambles, the honeysuckle, and all that stuff. And so we leased it from him. We put in some electric fence. We put in these 40 half acre paddocks. We can run four simultaneous groups of pigs through these 40 half-acre paddocks, each group running through 10 of these paddocks, so, you know, 1 through 10, 11 through 20, all right, you with me? So you got these four groups of pigs running simultaneously through, and they use trees for shade. There's a few scattered trees, you know, so they shade up under them. We also have portable shade mobiles with nursery shade cloth on them that we can move around where there aren't enough trees. But the bottom line is that in the course of a year from about mid-April until mid-November, we run the pigs through there, and we can run 300 pigs through there in a year, and those 300 pigs will gross of $300,000 and net $60,000 off of the 20 acres. And you know, the labor requirement is only an hour a day, so you know it's a pretty good return. Here's the thing is, the reason that this works is because we're using infrastructure that's portable. So we're not pouring concrete. We're using infrastructure that's not capital intensive, and it's not stationary. So the whole capital investment to do this whole thing was less than $5,000. We just added some water pipe, put in some electric fence, which is just, you know, two strands of simple wire. Deer can run over it real easy. I mean, it's the tie. Highest wire is only about 16 inches, so you know, you can just step across it real easy. Pigs are pretty low, and the pigs are able to eat grass. Of course, we give them local GMO free grain as well. But so they eat that. They eat the grass. They are able to eat up bugs and worms and root up, you know, starchy roots. But because we're moving them through these 10 half-acre paddocks. They're only on one spot for maybe 5 to 10 days, and then it has a nice big, you know, 60-day rest period. So we only move them through each one of these three times a year, but with this very short stay and a long rest period, it doesn't denude the area. Now, they'll tear it up while they're in there, but as soon as they move on, you know, it begins to grow back, and it germinates in a lot of brand new grasses and forbs and herbs and things that we haven't seen before, because the latent seed bank that's in the soil is waiting for a disturbance factor. And the pigs, of course, disturb it. That disturbance awakens, you know, it takes 1/1,000,000th of light, 1/1,000,000th of second of light to stimulate a seed to sprout. And so when it's awakened, then it can sprout, and you get this plethora of species diversity on there, and it's pretty neat. And of course, now the brambles are gone. You know, we set the feeder on in the shade, you know, on the bramble spots, so the pigs tear them out, root them up, and those have turned to grass. And it's, you know, it's pigs, so you wouldn't want to use it for a hay field by any means, because the land is, you know, it's rough. The pigs make it rough. They make their wallows and things like that. But on the whole, it's moved from this honeysuckle, brambles, and just a mess of briars to a beautiful field segmented in all these paddocks of forages, grasses, some weeds, and you know, very productive area, and saplings that are now released from the brambles. So we got walnuts and little wild apple trees and all sorts of young trees that are now 15, 16, 17 feet tall that are growing up, and those will gradually be a nice silvo pasture over time.
Awesome. Well, and I know you do this also with chickens. You do it with turkey. We talked about the cows already. One thing I wanted to mention, I think I read that you said your average cow at your farm only requires, I believe it was 40 or 60 days of hay versus the traditional cowman in your neighborhood is 160 days of hay, something like that. Is that right?
Yeah, the average here is 120 days a year, and we average 40 days. So it's not like we don't feed any hay, but when you're feeding 40 instead of 120, that's 80 days of hay you didn't have to make, didn't have to store, didn't have to feed. And when those herbivores can harvest it themselves and fertilize it themselves, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, that's incredible. Well, Joel, we didn't talk about specifically any of your books, but if we have someone who's interested, who's intrigued by what you've been talking about, tell us about some of the ways they can get educated, either through your website or books, or I believe you have classes that you put on, stuff like that. Talk about some more ways to get educated.
Sure. Well, I have written 10 books, and they cover a lot of different topics, and those are available at, anywhere books are sold, as well as our own farm gift shop. So, to drill down, if you're interested in what we do, the website is Polyface Farms. That's P-O-L-Y-F-A-C-E. It's all one word, polyfacefarms.com. And there will be all sorts of information there and links and things to pursue more stuff. Also, of course, listed there are classes that we do. We haven't set the schedule for next year, but in the summertime, we do the Polyface Intensive Discovery Seminars. These are 2 days, 6 meals, and trust me, it's worth coming just for the 6 meals. The 2 day, 6 meal, essentially we cram 4 days into two. They're two very long days, but that makes it easier for people to come instead of dragging it out into 4 days with a whole bunch of breaks and downtime. We just look, we're farmers, we're used to working hard, so we just push on through. But these are seminars that we do in July, and they're limited to about 30, 35 people, very intimate, and we cram as much in there as we can, from marketing to butchering chickens, making compost, moving cows, cutting trees, building roads, building ponds. I mean, it's extremely comprehensive. And then during the season, we do the lunatic tours. These are two-hour hay rides around the farm where we, take people around and show them. And beyond that, the farm is 24/7, 365. Anyone can come from any time, anywhere, to see anything, anytime, unannounced. That's our commitment to open sourcing and being, hospitable to seekers. We're always open to seekers.
Well, thank you. That is really awesome. And for the listeners out there, I know this was kind of an ag show today, not the health show, but I think most of our listeners understand my position that we're so intimately related with our food from a health perspective. I don't think my patients can get healthy and sustain health. We might be able to treat symptoms with supplements or with even pharmaceuticals at times, but to true wellness and true health and sustainable health, it all starts with the food. But it's got to be nutrient-dense food, locally grown food. We didn't even talk about that, how you know, a lot of this food's from 1,500 miles away. Well, they had to pick it a week or 10 days early, so the nutrients aren't deposited into that fruit or vegetable until the last few days when it's vine ripened. And I believe, Joel, you don't sell to anyone further than 4 miles away. Is that correct? You don't ship your food?
Four hours away.
Four hours away,
not 4 miles.
Right.
But yeah, but your point is well taken. So what happens is when food comes from such a distance, and that's the whole plan, the cultivars, the actual cultivars, the peppers, the tomatoes, the whatever, are actually selected for long distance bumping and bruising resistance, which means they're actually selected toward I call it cardboardish, you know. And the reason they taste like cardboard, act like cardboard, and feel like cardboard is because they are cardboard, so they can be transported. And so the juicy, sweet, nutrient dense stuff of great grandma's garden has been replaced with this cardboard stuff. And Sir Albert Howard said that when you use artificial manures, that's what he called chemical fertilizers, you have artificial soils which grow artificial plants, which make artificial animals, which then feed artificial people who can only be sustained in life with the injection of artificials. And he said that in 1943. So he was pretty prophetic.
Yes, he was. Well, we really enjoyed having you. We hopefully can have you back someday. I think this was a quick brush through a kind of a summary of what you do, which was great. And I encourage all the listeners to get on polyfacefarms.com or even go out. I know it's kind of a trip out there to the East Coast, but I think it'd be well worth it. My goal and my mission in life is to motivate some of the local agricultural community here in West Texas and some of these local farmers to take up this mantle and start producing local food here in a diverse manner. And I think there is a way to do it sustainably on a small scale, and you can still make a living and feed your family and go to bed every night with a peace of mind. So thank you, Joel, for sharing your experience with us, and we will be in touch with you in the future.
Thank you. It's been a privilege.
Okay.
Appreciate that, Joel. Again, Polyface, all one word, farms, right?
Yes.
All right, Joel. Thank you so much again. We look forward to having you back, and we will. And check out his books and all of his material there. So, Joel, you have a wonderful week, sir. Appreciate you being with us on You're the Cure today. You bet, Joel. Thank you.
Thank you, Wade.
You bet. Have a great day, sir.
Bye.
All right, Dr. Ben Edwards, just a minute or so before we get out of here. We appreciate you being with us on the show. But, again, if you'd like to learn more, veritasmedical.com. Of course, you can always go there, too. Listen to any of the programming, the shows. We always upload those there. You can definitely check that out. If you'd like to reach out to us directly, you can do so at 855-6-VERITAS, the number to call, 855-6-VERITAS. And don't forget that website, veritasmedical.com. Dr. Edwards, we appreciate you being with us on the show once again on this Monday. Look forward to seeing you back here next week here on AM 580.
Thank you, Wade. We're going to continue with our interviews next week. Ty Bollinger from The Truth About Cancer will be on next week, so it'll be an exciting show. I encourage everybody to tune in.
Okay. Thank you so much.